you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
It's Air Talk. I'm Sharon McNary, coming to you from 89.3 KPCC while Larry takes a well-deserved break. Last week, Vice President Kamala Harris went on her first foreign trip, going to both Guatemala and Mexico to discuss immigration. Following her conversation with Guatemalan President Alejandro Guillamatay, she took part in a press conference where they touched on the topic of immigration. It was at this moment where she'd sent a message to those migrants listening who were about to make the dangerous trip across the border. She said, "Do not come." This statement comes at a time when the Biden administration has made it a point to address the root causes of immigration, with the main reason being the increase in migrants that come from areas such as Central America. And so joining us to break all this down is Suyapa Portillo. She is an associate professor of Chicano-Chicana-Latino-Latina Transnational Studies at Pitzer College. She's also the author of the book Roots of Resistance, a story of gender, race, and labor on the north coast of Honduras. We also have with us James Frederick. He's a freelance journalist and contributor to NPR based in Mexico City. He's also co-writing a book with a Honduran asylum seeker about his family's migration stories. Thank you both so much for joining us. And to our listeners, we want to know what you think of the controversy from Vice President Harris's comments. Is it okay to say do not come when there's so much going on in their homelands that they need to escape? We'd love to hear what you think are at the root causes of this issue of immigration as well. Join the conversation. Call us at 866-893-5722. Let's speak first with James Frederick, freelance journalist who's done some pieces for NPR. For our listeners, could you please break down the situation that sort of sparked this immigration conversation and explain exactly why people had a negative reaction to Harris's statements?
Well, I think there's a few reasons that people reacted negatively to it. The first is that it sounds kind of crass. I mean, so I've been reporting for many years, mostly here in Mexico. So I meet lots of Central Americans who are traveling through Mexico, trying to make it to the US. And when you talk to those people, it becomes very obvious why a message like this would, one, sound crass, and two, just be totally ineffective and useless for people like that. And it's because what these people are leaving in mostly Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador is so much worse than what the United States could threaten. I mean, imagine if you're a migrant and you're thinking of leaving your country, you hear the Vice President of the United States say this. Well, you already know that a few years ago, under President Trump, we stole the children of migrants. We made it just awful for migrants, but it's been awful for migrants for a long time. So it sounds very crass to people who are fleeing such awful things, and it just doesn't work. There's no evidence to say that this kind of messaging works. So the question is, like, who is this messaging really for? Is it for migrants? Or, as a lot of people suggest, is this actually messaging for people in the United States who are anti-immigrant, and this is a way for the administration to say, hey, look, we're not open borders people?
Gives them a little bit of cover. So what are the life and death implications for people in their home countries right now?
Well, if I can just give an example of a migrant I know that is traveling to the U.S. right now. So there's this large Honduran family that I've known for several years. And many people in the family have fled over the last few years since the family's patriarch was murdered by the 18th Street Gang. And their youngest son first fled Honduras in 2018. He made it to the U.S. He was almost killed in Mexico, and he fled because this same gang was threatening him. Once he made it to the U.S., he was locked up in ICE detention. He was never able to request asylum. ICE detention was so awful that he tried to take his own life because they told him he was going to be deported. And then he was deported to Honduras anyway. A few weeks ago, the family told me that he fled again, which I was shocked by because he knows so well how dangerous the journey is, how unlikely it is that he's going to get into the U.S. And he still fled again. So the question for, you know, President Biden and Vice President Harris is, what do you say to a young man like that? Do you think your don't come messaging is going to help? And his story is not unique. There are so many people in situations like this, and we're not providing an answer or a solution for them.
Well, I want to bring in Professor Suyapa Portillo and get into the greater historical context of the U.S. relationship with Central America. We all know that migration does not occur in a vacuum. So describe the major issues that are driving Central Americans to attempt to immigrate to the United States. Suyapa?
Thank you so much. Well, there's been a 200-year history of U.S. involvement in Central America since the 1820s, so for about 200 years, right? In the 1850s, William Walker, for instance, a soldier who was a soldier during the Civil War in the U.S., goes to Nicaragua, declares himself president, right? There's been the United Fruit Company, which has had business in Guatemala, Honduras, and Costa Rica and Panama since the late 1800s, early 1900s. So there's already, when we think of migration, we think of social networks, right? We think of people go not just wherever they want, but they go where they know other Hondurans are, other Salvadorans are. So if you think about it, the U.S. corporations have established this social network of migration for about 200 years, right? So would-be immigrants have known about the United States and what exists here. So we have to understand that this way, because the exploitation that happens in the early 20th century all the way to the present by these companies, the Rosario Mining Company from New York in Honduras and Nicaragua, the United Fruit Company in Standard Fruit, right, these forms of capitalism, are also setting up networks for people to migrate. People know about New Orleans, New York, Los Angeles. Their families, their great-grandparents knew about it, right? The banana industry being sort of that large industry that gets developed in Guatemala, Honduras, in the region. So when I think of Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris in Guatemala, I can't help but think about the 1954 coup executed by the newly minted CIA in Guatemala in 1954, right? So the symbolic sort of message that she delivered, which I agree is for a U.S. audience, right, really wasn't about Guatemalans or Central Americans, right? Why didn't she go to Honduras or El Salvador, where also most of the migrants are from Honduras, right? Why not go to the U.S.-Mexico border? Why not go to the Mexico-Guatemala border, where we're seeing heavy militarization, right? So the other really sort of insulting thing, right, not just because of the history of the United Fruit Company and the coup d'etat in 1954 in Guatemala, but also the war that ensued post that coup d'etat, which ended in peace accords in 1996, led to 200,000 murders of people. There were, CIA agents on the ground. There were 1.5 million people displaced.
And you're talking about in Guatemala, right?
In Guatemala.
I lived there briefly in 1994, and I must say it was the single most scary place I've ever lived. There were guns everywhere. I mean, the guy who drove the Coca-Cola truck had a shotgun. There were automatic weapons at the bank, people pulling out pistols, and a lot of it had to do with the displacement of the population and everybody scared of everybody after the Civil War. And things have not settled down since then. That was 30 years ago.
Well, if you think about when the U.S. went through a civil war in the late 1800s, there was a period that we now teach in history as Reconstruction, right? After World War II, there was a period of Reconstruction in Europe. In Central America, there hasn't been a period of Reconstruction. In fact, the generals implicated in over, 600 village massacres in Guatemala, right, implicated in El Mozote massacre in El Salvador, they haven't been brought to justice. People are still not even talking about what happened. It's the historical memory process hasn't happened. If you notice in the Southern Cone after the Dirty Wars, there was a huge period of reconciliation, right? What they call reconciliation.
Right.
That hasn't happened in Guatemala. Guatemala's still sort of bleeding, right, from this situation. And since, you know, for the LA listeners, right, the largest population of Maya K'iche' people from that period who migrated to live in Los Angeles, right? And now we're seeing an even larger migration of Guatemalan Maya folk from other areas in Guatemala, not just the K'iche' region, where a lot of the war took place and a lot of the massacres. So Los Angeles is still a destination because, you know, 1.5 million people were displaced. They were displaced to Mexico, to places in Belize, the Yucatan, but also the United States. And so those are social networks that get created over time. And that's why people come to the regions where they feel that they know people, right, from their hometown.
And well, let's take a question from Ellen of Pasadena. Ellen, what's your take on what we're seeing?
Well, I think we have to get to the cause of the issue, and I think we have to help resolve issues down there with democratically elected. If you understand the history of the CIA, or since 1880s, and study what the Dulles brothers, who were big movers down there, and the overthrow and coups that they fomented of democratically elected presidents, because they didn't want democracies there because it was cheaper labor or because it was easier to control that area. We need to solve those problems, and we need to encourage people to stay and to fight in the street and march, because it isn't much safer here. We're also facing limited resources and an over explosion of population, which no one wants to face. We're up over 7.8 billion, and we're headed probably at closer to 8 billion, including the national.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ellen. You know, we do get kind of a vanilla history taught sometimes in the schools. A lot of people don't learn about, you know, the overthrow of democratically elected governments. But to get to back to the present day, for those who've managed to cross and are now in the United States, question to James, what are the solutions to the issues once they come?
So what are solutions here in the United States once migrants reach the United States?
Yeah, I mean, will they get asylum? Is DACA the answer? TPS?
The answer is that we need a complete overhaul. So I want to preface this by saying that I'm not an immigration lawyer. I'm not a policy expert on this, but our immigration laws have changed basically none since 1996, I believe, when we last had our big immigration reform, and that was when Clinton was president. And since Clinton reformed migration, and since he started criminalizing crossing the border in 1996, we have been roughly following the same strategy in terms of migration, which was that we want to deter migration. So border walls started being built after 9/11. So in 2003, we created the Department of Homeland Security. That has completely militarized immigration enforcement. There are parts of the border that, you know, for people who don't go there often, it's shocking to know the border region, to know people who live there, that this is on the whole a very peaceful place, a place where there is so much cross-border activity. So then to see this hugely militarized complex of walls, people with assault rifles guarding the border, you know, and then it was taken to another level by President Trump to, you know, steal people's children, to make migration as punishing as possible so people wouldn't come. We've been doing that for almost 30 years now. Our approach to migration has been to deter people from coming. And if you still think at this point that deterrence might be the solution, I don't know what else to tell you. It's failed for almost three decades now.
And hence, the reaction to the vice president's comment, oh, don't come. Professor Portillo, what kinds of legislative answers do you think, in the 30 seconds we have left before our break, might help here?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I agree with Ellen. We do have to make sure that we support democratic governments and not one of landlord standards in Honduras. But one, temporary protected status, right? A path to residency for TPS workers are essential workers who got us through the pandemic and have been here for over 20 years. They pay their taxes. They're working hard to contribute. Documented, right? Undocumented. We need an amnesty program, right? President Biden, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, and Congress must act to ensure permanent protection for temporary protected status people who are in limbo at this point. And those are the people that got us through the pandemic, who risked their lives risked their families and their communities to work, to bring groceries, to, work in the healthcare industry, right? We need to push that forward.
Thank you. We'd love to hear from our listeners about what they think is important to focus on in this issue of immigration from Central America. 866-893-5722. More after this break.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAS.com/sweeps.